You are listening to Punk News Podcast, and we are here with a very special guest. We are here with Ari Katz of Beach Rats and also of Lifetime. Beach Rats got a new album coming out next week, next Friday. The new album is called Rat Beat, and it's out July 29 via Epitaph Records. And let's open up with the killer single. And we are back. And first of all, we're here with M. Moore. M. Moore, what's happening? What's going on in the world of M. Moore?
Hey.
Today. Hey, everybody.
Today, somebody told me they went to an Aqua concert, and I thought that meant, like, that was the opposite of On Ice. And then they're like, no, the band Aqua. And I was like, oh, okay. But it's just like, that'd be so cool. We need Aqua concerts, like, the opposite of On Ice, in water.
Isn't that just water ballet, whatever they call that? Synchronized swimming? Isn't that synchronized swimming?
Synchronized swimming, but with instruments.
Hallie, what do you think of synchronized swimming with instruments in the water while people swim?
As someone that did an absolutely sort of unusual amount of jobs in water, i.e. when I was a professional mermaid and when I was in Forza Bruta, I'm all into things happening in water. I'm a natural born swimmer, people.
Well, speaking of things happening in water and natural born swimmer, we are here with Ari Katz in the band Beach Rats. And the reason they're called Beach Rats is because it's Ari. It's Brian Baker of Minor Threat. And it is two members of Bouncing Souls, Brian Keenan and the guy that produced Crazy in the Brains, Pete Steinkoff. They all live near the beach, and that's why they're called Beach Rats. Ari, how important is the concept of the beach to the band Beach Rats, or is it just a fun name?
Well, it's good. It's a good name for us because, right, we're all from the beach, and I think we all sort of like a lot of people that we know just eventually gravitated to the beach, and yeah. We wanted it to be fun for sure. We didn't want it to be too serious, but yeah, we all live at the beach. We all love the beach, and it's kind of like the common thing for us.
One of the things that I always find interesting about the beach and punk culture, and arguably more than the East Coast, the West, you know, West Coast, SoCal has that whole beach punker thing, which didn't even really exist for the first wave. And I realize we're going on a tangent already, but there's the whole thing of the first wave of Hollywood punk, and the beach punks came in and changed the dynamic. And the original Hollywood punkers thought that, like, beach, you know, beaches and surfing was kind of bro culture, and they were like arty culture. I'm wondering, Ari, like, is the surfer beach bro stereotype a falsity? Does that not exist? And should punk rock and hanging out and having fun at the beach go hand in hand? To be fair, the Ramones had many, I don't think the Ramones actually loved the beach, but they had lots of songs about loving the beach. What's your perspective there?
Well, there's certainly a really heavy beach bro culture for sure, which I don't think any of us are drawn to it for that. So yeah, there's a whole thing that goes with the beach that is, you know, very not punk, I guess. But you know, the beach that we live at in Asbury, it's, you know, it, not so much anymore, but when we all started moving here like 20 years ago, it was pretty cheap and cruddy. And it, you know, I think a lot of punks were drawn to that for sure.
Someone told me that the genesis of Beach Rats were at the Dave Franklin Memorial Concert. Is that accurate?
Yeah. So the way I remember this band starting, I've heard it explained a different way, but my memory is, so there was Dave Franklin passed away from Vision, and he was a huge figure on the East Coast here, in Jersey especially. Like my first band, when I was just a drummer, I used to play with Vision. They used to help us out, and he was just like a huge character, and he just affected a lot of people's lives. So like when he passed away, a lot of people got together to play a show for as a benefit, and it was a ridiculous, like every band fucking came out. It was crazy. Like I don't remember the lineup, but you could look it up. But it's pretty crazy that all these people gave their time for this guy. And so basically Lifetime was asked to play it but couldn't, and then the Bouncing Souls were asked to play it and they couldn't. So Pete Steinkoff called me kind of out of the blue and was like, hey, you know, since we both can't play, why don't we just learn a bunch of covers, and you know, we'll learn like five songs and we'll just play just for fun. It'll be me, you, Brian Keenlin, and then Dubs, our drummer, he's played in a bunch of bands around town, and he was also like the Bouncing Souls drum tech for a long time. So anyway, we agree to play these five songs, and we practiced like twice. And the show was huge. It was like thousands of people, and it was scary as shit. Like playing these, like we picked like some serious punk covers, and I was totally nervous singing these songs in front of some of the people that were there. It was terrifying as a person. But anyway, so it was super fun. We played these songs. We got off stage, and then Brian Keenlin from the Souls is like, hey, Brian Baker moved to town recently and he's interested in starting a hardcore band. He's like, why don't we just do that? I was like, okay. And the first time I met Baker was at our first rehearsal, and we just, you know, met and started writing. It was great.
I have to assume that, you know, you were or are a Minor Threat fan. So
I feel like I just talked for 20 minutes, by the way. Sorry.
No, it's perfect.
Ari, every word you drop is a golden piece of information and trivia. So please keep all the right, all coming. Right. that was kind of a weird metaphor. Anyways, when you're in the same room as Brian Baker, like, oh my God, that's Brian Baker, the Minor Threat guy. You're like, oh, there's this guy, Brian, that plays the guitar. What was the initial dynamic and what's the dynamic now?
Well, I don't think I was nervous or anything. I'm not trying to sound cool, but there's not that, like, I kind of met every hero of mine at that point, you know. I've been lucky enough to meet most of like my hardcore punk heroes, or a lot of them anyway. So, you know, I mean, it's definitely like, wow, that's Brian Baker, you know. But he was just like very chill and quiet, and that's how I kind of am. And the Souls guys, they're a little bit more I don't know, not as shy as me. So they kind of, like, it was a great dynamic. And Dubs, we've known forever, the drummer. And it was, I don't know how anybody felt, but I know that we just, like, we said hi and we basically started, like writing riffs and playing. So that was perfect for me. The less, like, small talk for me, the better.
you sort of just answered this question, but I'd like to ask you this. Is, you know, people talk about, we'll just use Joe Strummer as an example. They talk about Joe Strummer as a deity. They talk about Glenn Danzig as a deity. They talk about Ari Katz of Lifetime as a deity. They're like, oh my God, it's Ari Katz. Is even our greatest artists, are they just people? You know, is everyone just a person, or are some people really, I guess, what the reputation or their, you know, a step above, if you will?
You know, it's different. Like, for me, like, I don't know, I'm a musician and I've been playing hardcore music since I was probably 15, and I'm 51 now. Well, I will be in about a week. And
happy birthday.
Like, thanks. What was the question?
Sorry, I ruined that. Sorry.
The question is when we see Joe Strummer walking down the street, should we drop down to our knees and say, we're not worthy? Or should we be like, hey, Joe, what do you think of the weather?
No, you should look. They're definitely, hopefully, they're just regular ass people that did really awesome shit. But like, it's not lost on me. I mean, I didn't think it right away, probably because I was trying to be too cool and not, like, you know, worry about it or think about it too much. But like, it's definitely not lost on me. I mean, I have just, like, specific memories of, like, you know, like, I'm sure we all do. Like, I remember being in a car with Dave Franklin from Vision and, like, just blasting the Can I Say record, you know? And so, like, there's definitely, like, his music like, has a lot of, like, pretty huge memories for me, for sure. But it's great when you meet somebody who's super talented and, you know, lucky enough to be in so many kind of, like, big things, and they're still kind of just, like, he's a regular person. I mean, he's been a working musician his whole life. So it's not like, you know, he's lived in a different universe, but like, he's a regular ass guy who just wants what everybody else wants, which is, you know, just be left alone and have some fun.
Brian of the Bouncing Soul said, with this band, you're going to get authentic punk and hardcore from us because we are all from the 80s. It's literally taking it back to some of our biggest influences, like Negative Approach and Poison Idea, and of course Minor Threat. My question for you in the band, when you're writing lyrics, when you're up there on stage, how much is the history of punk rock and 80s, you know, hardcore in your mindset, and how much of it is you doing what you want to do right now?
So like, I didn't approach this. I approach everything I do the same exact way, which is the only way I know how, which is I listen to it and I just, like, do what I think that song needs. And so it wasn't like I'm going to write some, like, 80s ass lyrics or whatever, but, or sing, you know, but like the music that we wrote, you know, like, we wrote it, I guess, like, we did back when we were younger. Like, it was like somebody comes up with a riff in like 5 seconds, you know, and then like somebody else in the room does the something else, and then we just arrange it. Like, it just kind of, like, it was really nice to write music, you know, like we used to, just like 5 people in a room. And like, okay, song's done. That's it. And when it's done, it's done. It's no, you know, it's like, the great thing about hardcore is you know, like when it's like, it's a very limited palette, I guess, you know? And I think making things with limitations is always good. And when there's time constraint, that's even better. And when you know, like, okay, we have 2 months to write 10 songs, let's go for it. Then that's what you do. And it's fun.
Yeah, it's interesting that you talk about how limitations can be a virtue. And in a way, I mean, definitely some of the greatest stuff just comes, especially in punk rock, because people don't think about it. They just do it. There's no time to second guess it. You get that initial impulse or blast. I'm going to ask you actually a somewhat obscure question, and maybe I'll throw it to Hallie or M to see if they have any questions. But you talked about how Dave Franklin, you used to hang out with Dave Franklin, and he was a good friend, and the Vision tribute concert or whatever. I'm just, before Vision was Vision, they were Neurotic Impulse. Who had Pete Vintantonio, who would become Jack Terrycloth in it.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, do you have any Neurotic Impulse or Pete V or Jack Terrycloth memories?
Yeah, I mean, I was always very intimidated by him. Like, he was a few years older than me, and he always was way cooler than I could ever have been. And, you know, that's a total compliment. But, like, yeah, I mean, he was another huge character. And, you know, when we wrote in Lifetime, we have a song, theme song from New Brunswick Basement Show. And that's a direct ripoff or, you know, tribute to Theme Song for Nothing. That's absolutely where that like title came from, which is, you know, a Sticks and Stones record. But yeah, he was, yeah. I became friendlier with him when we were older, but when I was like younger in the scene, you know, I was like a straight edge dork, and he was, you know, like black, cool black clothes, and yeah, he was just cool. I was a dork.
You know, I feel like everyone sort of thought of Court Tavern as being like sort of like the hometown club that Lifetime would play. Like, is there a specific venue that that feels like home base for you with Beach Rats? Is there like, or like a Jersey venue that you particularly love playing now?
Well, like, unfortunately we haven't played that much. But we've played, there's a spot in Asbury called House of Independence. Yeah. And I hope I don't get in trouble. It's a weird club. I mean, the thing, like, they're super cool, and the people that run it are awesome. Gentleman Jim from Crucial Youth works there, and it's a little sterile. I don't even know why I'm saying this, but that we've played there a few times, and I really love, despite my complaints, I love playing there. Lifetime, that's where Lifetime always plays too when we play.
Yeah,
but House of Independence, I think, is like a cool, like, mid, you know, not huge, kind of like you could do whatever you want kind of club.
Yeah. And like, you know, Asbury, you know, I was just there a couple weeks ago. Actually, it was funny. I actually saw Pete at the playground with his kid, because I was at the playground with my kid.
Nice.
But you know, it's so different, like you were saying, from how it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
But still, I don't know. I still feel like I can go there and I can't walk 5 blocks without running into somebody that I know.
Yeah.
And it's still like, it feels so different, but something about it, like this undercurrent of it being like a punk town, like it's managed to hold on to that in a way that it's so crazy to me because, and I know like in New York City, like I spent 25 years in New York City, and when a neighborhood would be like the punk neighborhood and then it would get gentrified, like the punks would all go somewhere. They'd all have to go somewhere else. You know, and then you'd go back to the East Village and you wouldn't run into anybody you knew there because it was all NYU kids. I don't know. I just find Asbury to be such an interesting place. And I wasn't sure if there was like anything you had to say about that. Like, how does it manage to change and stay the same? And I don't know, just, you know, anything you wanted to say about Asbury.
It's like, I guess being like, you know, growing up in Jersey, like I grew up in Edison, which is centralish north Jersey, but you know, and when you grow up in New Jersey, like the beach is just always, I mean, even when you grow up in New York, it's like the summer with the beach, like going to the Jersey Shore, there's just something about it, and it's just like a part of your thing, you know. And when I was younger, people used to gravitate towards New Brunswick, where Rutgers is. And that's where Lifetime and the Bouncing Souls and we all like got our start. And that's where everybody sort of like went from their parents' house to their first apartment was in New Brunswick. But then like after, you know, a lot of us after New Brunswick, we slowly just started moving towards the beach and Asbury, especially because it was cheap and you could literally like just do whatever the fuck you wanted. And it was great. And, you know, and then, you know, but it, then it gets a little busy and it gets priced out, but like, so everybody moves to the next town and, but there's such a, foundation, I think, of people that kind of got there and maybe got in, you know, bought houses and things like that. But there's, I think, you know, despite what kind of goes on with like the economy of Asbury, I think there's always like those people are going to always be there. You know, and it's not even Asbury, all these little beach towns around, there's just something so just cool about it, you know, and like I think it's where people want to be.
I was thinking about the dynamic between the members of Beach Rats, and I wonder, are you driven by anger or good times or both when you're writing music for the band and your mindset right now?
I gotta tell you, I don't know. I've definitely not anger. I don't think I've ever been driven by anger.
Really? You've never, I mean, have you ever made a decision out of anger, or are you so in touch with the universe that doesn't affect you that way?
No, I mean, I was raised like, I'm Jewish. I was raised by angry people. And, no, I have a very, I have a relationship with anger, dealing with my own anger for sure. And I'm, you know, I don't even know what I'm saying, but anger was never my, it's never what I like saying about really, you know, and I feel like I've always written about the same stuff. I've never, you know, I constantly think that I'm just writing the same song over and over again. And you know, it's, but I kind of like that.
well put, Amber, how do you have any more questions? Or should we wrap this one up?
I love all the projects that you've done with Tanis, and I don't know, what's different about making music with your spouse that's different from making music with your friends, or is it the same?
It's very different. Yeah. but
I couldn't be in a band with my husband. I think this is part of why I'm like curious to, you know, to ask this question.
It's very different because you have all like the other stuff, but you know, when you could, you know, I think like really being in a band, especially when you're older and you don't have a lot of time, like, it's just about like, you know, kind of getting down to business and doing what needs to be done in the moment, you know, and then like, you know, just separating that stuff, you know, it's hard, but it's possible.
Yeah.
Well said. Well, listen, Ari's in Beach Rats. The new album comes out next week. It's called Rat Beat. Plus, there is one Beach Rats show on deck. That's going to be at Punk in the Park, November 6th, way out in OCCA. They're playing with Dropkick Murphys, Bouncing Souls, Murder City Devils, Anti-Flag, and a whole bunch of other bands. And so, listen, Beach Rats is a cool band. I have dug what I've heard so far. Ari, is there anything else that you want the listeners to know or anything with regards to Beach Rats or anything else?
Just check out the record. I mean, it's like it's a real record. It's not just whatever. I think some people think it's like, you know, they call it a super group or all these whatever, but it's really just like five friends that made like I think a pretty good record. Pretty psyched.
Well, I agree. And here is a song that those five friends made. This is Blown to Bits off the brand new record. Check it out in a week. And Ari, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Thanks, Ari.
Thanks so much.
All right, bye, guys.
And we are back, and that was Blown to Bits by Beach Rats, the band featuring Hallie Blood. Do you like my radio announcer voice? Featuring Ari Katz, Brian Baker, Pete Steinkopf, and Brian Kalin of the Bouncing Souls.
It's not, I mean, you use that voice a lot. I like it. Yeah, well, but like, I think that you're asking that question as if like, do I like it because you think it's an unusual thing that you're doing now?
Well, that's bad news for me when I think I'm doing something weird, but it's what I usually do. So,
well, it doesn't seem weird to me, but I do like it.
Well, listen, people, that was Ari of Beach Rats and, of course, of Lifetime. And so check out that record out on Epitaph Records. We have a few news stories that we're going to blast through, but we're going to blast them kind of quick because, well, you don't know, listener, behind the scenes, we're having a meeting recording the Punk News podcast after this is over, and then we're gonna determine the future of the show. But also next week, I'm not gonna tell you who's gonna be on the show, but next week will be episode 600, and it's gonna be a very special guest, and I think you will dig it. Bigger question, I don't know if we'll be able to keep the reins on next week's guest. We'll see how that goes. We will see how that goes.
I don't even know who this guest is, so I'm like now I'm very intrigued. I'm very intrigued. Do we keep the reins on any guests? Like, do we have the reins on ourselves enough to like rein in anybody?
True. I feel like our podcast is very easy. Like, people can just say whatever they want. We're like, yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, you know? It is fine. That's what podcasts are, right? People fucking talk about shit.
Wait till next week. I will give you all a hint. Well, let me see if I give you a hint. Next week's guest is like this. So that's who next week's guest is going to be. At any rate.
All right. It's on, man.
And it's going to be on. One of my favorite people in punk for sure. Here's something else that's one of my favorite things in punk. DFL, a.k.a. Dead Fucking Last, the band featuring Monty Messick and Crazy Tom, are re-releasing their third and final album. It is called Grateful. It was recorded in 1997. It followed the period after Adam Horovitz of the Beastie Boys left the band and produced their second album. The new version is released on Spam Records. You can pre-order it now. And I have heard the new edition. It's really, really good. I love DFL. All three DFL albums are so good. Recently, for various reasons, I've been listening to the first one a lot, but then I've dug into the second and third one, and all three DFL records are so good. The third one was interesting because the band recorded it and then they broke up without ever touring on it, but it's also the most experimental record. On the CD version, quite frustratingly, all the tracks were stitched together in one 26-minute track, which a lot of the anarcho-punk bands did when CDs became a thing. I know Flux of Pinginians did it, Crass did it on a compilation. And Anti-Sect did it. And I don't know why the anarcho-punk bands thought that was a cool idea to put the entire album as one track on a CD. It's like really frustrating, honestly. Like, first of all, I'm like, you know, anarcho-punk is like, there's no authority but yourself. But you don't get to pick what track you want to listen to. So it seems very counterintuitive to me, you know. But I guess their argument is it's one piece of art, so it's not fair to slice it up. So to me, it feels like one of those symbolic things that doesn't really carry its weight. That being said, the new DFL, the reissue of DFL Start I'm Grateful, is now on vinyl, so you can skip to literally any second you want at any time. I'm psyched for it. Hallie Bullitt, do you have any connection to or a special place in your heart for DFL, or are you giving it a spin for the first time like many people because it never got its proper due because the band broke up right before it came out? But of course, as the listeners know, the band reunited in 2013. They put out an EP. It's really, really, really good, and I'm very excited to see what DFL has in the works. But Hallie Bullitt, Grateful, DFL, what do you say?
So I don't know that album well. I do like DFL, but that album isn't one that I checked out a lot. And so yeah, so I'm grateful that this is being reissued because it's you know, it'll give me a reason to actually give it a listen in a way that I haven't before. Em, what do you think?
Yeah, it was kind of same thing. Like I like the band, but I haven't spent a lot of time with this album. Because I read the story and I was like, wait, do I know that? And then I listened to the song that was like linked. And I was like, I know the song. And then I looked up the album and I was like, nope, I only know that one song. And I don't know. So that was just kind of one of those. But yeah, I'm looking forward to same thing, like checking it out and going back and listening to everything. And maybe they'll tour this. That'd be cool. Because John, you said they never toured it. It'd be neat if they.
Right. That actually would be really cool if they did the whole album. So we'll see. I know there have been talks of an East Coast set of shows, which would be really, really cool. And I really hope that comes to fruition. One thing just to tack on is recently, at a lot of the record stores I've been to, a lot of the record store owners have been like, there's a lot of reissues coming out and I'm all for it. And like I said, I'm all for it too. It seems like a lot of records that came out in the 90s that were only on CD are getting the vinyl press now. And it's cool, man. We complain a lot on this show because it is kind of the purpose for us to say what we think is cool and what we think is bad. But it is cool when sometimes things are just cool. So despite the fact that bands really aren't getting any money, it is cool that like every conceivable record is getting a vinyl reissue these days, which is pretty cool, honestly. I mean, I'm all for it, you know. What is interesting, not to drag this out, but is when they would reissue a record like 10 or 15 years ago, people were like, it's a cash grab. But now that bands aren't making any money ever, like whenever bands reissue an album, like no one says it's a cash grab. I guess that's because people realize bands aren't making any money, or people have been conditioned so much to just buy, because people definitely have been conditioned to just buy. I don't know. It's probably a mix of the two, but I think it's probably more that people are just excited to see rare stuff come out and be able to get it again. I don't know. So
I think you're right. I think you're onto something though. I think people see this not as a cash grab, but as a survival grab. It's like for a lot of bands, like this is now the only way that they have this and touring. And if you're a band that's not touring anymore, like this is it. Nobody's paying to listen to your music. other than, you know, buying shit like this. So I think you're right. I do think there's been like an attitude shift about it, you know?
Well said. Speaking of shifting attitudes, Titus Andronicus has released a new record or a new single. Halle Bullet, tell us about Titus Andronicus, somewhat from your neck of the woods, I think, correct? Am I right there?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I feel like we were like, you know, like I know Patrick is from Jersey, actually. That's why this music video is shot in Jersey. But I know we were always like running into those guys in Brooklyn when we were still in Brooklyn. And I don't know. I mean, I like this band. I've always liked this band. I realized when this single came out that I actually hadn't listened to I didn't even listen to the album that they put out in 2019, which I guess was produced by Bob Mould. I was like, well, that's another thing that I missed that I guess I have to go back and listen to. But I think this single is so great. Like, I think this single is so great. It's just like so exactly what you want from this band. It's like crazy, crazy guitar solos and really anthemic chorus. And this single just totally knocked me on my butt. It was like I was already playing it a lot at home. And then I actually heard it on the radio in the car this morning. You know how when you hear a song just come on the radio, somehow it's like more exciting than if you had just played it for yourself.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. I've been enjoying it at home, and I really have been enjoying it a lot at home, but it came on the radio and I nearly crashed my car. I lost my goddamn mind. It was like so fun. And I like the video. They shot it as part of the actual July 4th parade that was in Patrick's hometown, which I think is Glens Falls. I'm not a Jersey person. My husband would be mad at me if I got that wrong, but I the video, they're playing on a flatbed, you know, down the streets of this, you know, pretty typical suburban town. And I don't know, I maybe have more to say about that, but I'm wondering if you guys like this. I think people are really excited about this single, and I would include myself in that group, but I don't know how you guys responded to it.
Titus Andronicus is very much a music critics band. I saw them live once, and it was literally like a 3-hour show, and they literally played like 40 songs. They played the Rolling Stones' "Start Me Up." I think they did like Danzig's "How the Gods Kill." And after about 2-hour mark, they did like a 25-minute version of "Sister Ray" by Velvet Underground. I'm like, wow, what a finale! You know, 25-minute version of "Sister Ray," and they played for another hour after that. Holy shit! You know, like, so they do a lot of nodding and winking and homages to the great rock canon. What I do think is cool is they are one of the very few modern, they might be a punk in attitude or indie rock in attitude, but the music to me sounds very much rock and roll, which I dig. They're one of the very few, I would say, modern rock and roll bands that actually do rock and roll and aren't like some studio cheesy rock sound, if you will. Like, there's a lot of bands,
yeah,
like, we're a rock band, and it's like this cheesy canned sound. Like, these guys are rocking. And I wonder if it's because I don't want to say it's recorded like it's a 70s record, but it's got the piano banging around, it's got the riffs and the howling, and I just think it's one of the better rock albums and rock bands of the past probably 30 years, at least 20 years for sure. And more, what do you think of Titus Andronicus, either the Shakespearean play or this band? Or the movie starring Anthony Hopkins.
If Em just only talked about Shakespeare, and she's like, "Well, I thought the second act was."
Oh wait, there's a band? What? No. I love the band. They're great. The song rules. I'm really excited for a new album. They played in Toronto when they did the Monitor anniversary tour. Those photos are up on Punk News from Stephen McGill. He did the photos, they're really cool. And I missed that show and I was really bummed. So I want them to tour this new album and I want to see them.
Me too. This song made me want to see them again.
Do you guys think them covering "A Pair of Brown Eyes," the biggest hit by the Pogues, was a cool nod to the Pogues? Or is that too bold of a move? It's like if a band covers "Satisfaction" by the Rolling Stones. Is it too bold?
No, I think they pull it off. I mean, when you can play that well, I don't know. When you can play that well, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that. Do you have an opinion?
I think it's kind of, I like how they take, you know me, I always appreciate bands that take big swings, and Tyler St. Geronicus takes big swings. Sometimes they don't hit, but a lot of times they do, and I think this next one's really going to hit. And more, tell us about Brooks.
Oh, go ahead. Oh, wait, but I thought of you, John, actually, at the end of this song, because I feel like the there's like a thing they do at the end in the outro that's so Rolling Stones. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like at the very end of the song, it's the way they choose to do that. It's the way the vocals are arranged. It's like when they're like, "Hey, you wanna turn the screws on me?" Like they do like a repeat of that at the end, and I thought of you immediately. I was like, "This is a punk band doing the Stones." Like that to me felt like a direct nod to the Stones in a way that I found very pleasing.
You are absolutely right. You are absolutely right. I that didn't occur to me, but I'm thinking about it now. You're absolutely right, and it is very much kind of a nod to the Mick Jagger, Keith Richards, chorus following the chorus.
Totally.
Indeed.
Yeah, and then the only other thing I wanted to say about it, and then I'll let us talk about something else, is that I might be reading too much into it, but I liked that they did it at a 4th of July parade. And maybe that was just like funny to them or ironic, or maybe they just wanted to be able to ride on a flatbed through town without having to like, you know, have cops bothering them. And so they were able to get a parade permit. But like, I liked it. I feel like I would love to see. And again, if I'm reading meaning into it, that's not there, then, you know, forgive me. But I would like to see more punks, liberals, queers embracing America. Do you know what? It's our freaking country too. And like, it's our democracy that's under threat. And I there was something about like them playing at a, I don't know. I had like a whole moment that would probably was just individually for me, my interpretation, but where I was like, hell yeah. Like, hell yeah. The punks get to like, be at the 4th of July parade and take pride in the parts of America that we're proud of, not the parts that are horrible. But like, why do we associate the flag with all the parts that are horrible? Why do we associate like a 4th of July parade with all the parts? I felt like there was like a small reclamation here, at least for me, that I enjoyed. Okay. Now, sorry. Now we can move on. Unless you wanted to say something about that.
No, I agree. Well said, well put. I did like how there's the police cars behind them. And I'm like, I like how you can bend that in a lot of different ways. Like why are the police following behind? I thought that was kind of cool. You are right about the flag in that, in like Europe and like Italy or even like England, the way the English flag, even if they're not, even especially in Italy, the way the Italian flag all over, even if they hate the current government, they, you know, the flag represents more than the government. Whereas here, people associate the flag with the government or the bad parts of the government. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Why did they get the flag, man? That's my freaking flag. Why do they get it? Do you know what I mean? Okay, sorry.
Let's take back the "Don't Tread on Me" flag and let's reverse it. You know what I mean? Anyway, yes. Enough. Emor, tell us about Gross or G.R.O.S.S. Gross.
All right. So Gross are really exciting. They're really awesome. They are a new hardcore band out of Halifax, and it's Mad Grace, who I interviewed, check it out.
That's a great interview, Em.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Cluttered and Future Girls and like 50 other projects. And Becca Daly, who is also in Cluttered and in Book Buddies. She sang on the year-long winter EP from Future Girls that was like just released. So anyway, they teamed up. When they team up, they're like a dream team. They're just awesome. Like Cluttered, so good. I can't say enough about them. So anyways, this is in a completely different direction. This is pure like hardcore. It's lo-fi. It's great. There's, I think, only like 5 songs. The longest one is 1:09, and the shortest one is 38 seconds. It just rips by. So this is our new demo, and that's out now on Suicide Records. That's out of Nova Scotia. And that, if you like hardcore punk and you like Canadian hardcore punk. Check them out because they also have like stuff by Bougie Boys and Antibodies and Ritual Warfare and like all sorts of good stuff. So I really, really like this. It's different from what from all the other projects that they're in. So it was really nice to have something not really outside the box, but like just really, really different. So there might be more, and I hope there is. And I hope that they play live because I would want to see them. What did you guys think of Gross?
Yeah, I love this. And it was, the timing was funny because I actually just recently ended up, I don't know why, because it came out in 2021, but I just was listening to some of the stuff that Book Buddies had put out in 2021, like Neon. I've been listening to a lot of that stuff. And so to hear this, you know, new collaboration with Becca and Maddie Grace, I love this. I thought it was really cool. And like you're saying, both of these artists, they put out a lot of stuff. They're in a bunch of bands. I do feel like there's a common thread through a lot of those bands. And I think you're right. This is something really, truly different, I think, that we're hearing from them. So I was all about this. John, did you like it?
Yeah, I thought it was real cool for a hardcore demo tape. I think what's cool is it's hardcore punk, but it retains the punk kind of looseness and snap. And I thought it was real cool. My only suggestion, I mean, for a demo tape, I think it's real cool. My only suggestion is if they make a real project out of it, and this is my, I'm not even complaining about this record, but this is like, there's a million right now. There's a million hardcore bands that go through Philadelphia. They're all really cool, but they all sound exactly the same. They all do kind of the same thing. I thought this demo tape was real cool. For a demo tape, it is real cool. But were they to make an EP or an album, I would hope they would keep this classic hardcore backbone and then put in something unique or weird that makes it special to them. I think any hardcore band these days to be interesting need to do that. Although, I mean, I'm obviously wrong. I'm not wrong. If you want to be a generic by the numbers hardcore band, you're going to do fine. And then everyone will say how you're the best band ever for about 18 months. And then everyone will forget about you. And that'll be that. If you do something unique or weird on top of that, I think that's kind of how you last or make interesting art, as it were. So anyways, go ahead, Allie. You going to say something?
No.
Okay. Yeah. So anyway, that's my opinion. Here's my opinion on Off. Keith Morris says Off's new album is going to be out this fall. That was not confirmed by the record label, which is Fat Possum just re-released the first three Off albums. Keith said the new album is coming out this fall, and I'm very excited to hear it. I have no idea what it's going to sound like. I know there was some talk that the fourth Off LP is going to be somewhat different than the first three. So I'm very curious. I'm excited for it. As always, I'm sad that Steve McDonald is no longer in the band, but listen, what can I do? I saw Circle Jerks last Friday. Keith was sounding great, so I'm sure the record's going to be killer. And like War Without Dave Brocky will come with mixed emotions. No Steve McDonald, but what can you do? I don't know. And or Hallie, you have any comments on the upcoming Off record?
No, just that you said listeners, John and I were supposed to go see Circle Jerks together in Asbury, actually, and I couldn't go because my best friend was having a birthday party that night. And so I couldn't go to the show. But you said, John, you were like, well, I know Keith's going to be doing more stuff with Off now, so you might not have a chance to see Circle Jerks again for a while. And like, as soon as this was announced, I was like, oh, yep, there it is. Now he's going to be doing Off. But I would happily see him with Off too. But it made me retroactively even more angry that I didn't go to that Circle Jerks show. Although he can just tour with both. I don't know. He seems to have more energy than I certainly will at that age.
He was doing Flag and Off at the same time for a while. Yeah. And he said that he would do Flag again. It's just he's got a lot of things happening, which is pretty cool, honestly. He's 66 and he did not sound like he was 66. He was sounding like Keith 1980. Like, he sounds so good. Would you guys want to see Keith and a backing band do a mix of Flag, Off, and Circle Jerks, or would you only want to see one by the actual band? You see what I'm saying?
I would only want to see one. I otherwise it would feel too like Even though it wouldn't be, it would feel like a cover band or like a tribute band to me, even though it would be Keith. You know what I mean? Would you like to see that?
Well, what if you go to see Punk New Summer Soiree 6 and Crazy the Brains is playing and they're like, wait a minute, and Keith Morris comes out and they do like 10 songs across the discography? How about that?
Is that a possibility?
No, it's not a possibility at all. Anytime I throw a show, I have about 30 wacky dreams, and maybe 3 wacky dreams can be real. But you know, that's what you got to do.
If it was like a one-off thing, that would be amazing. Like as soon as you said that, I like got very excited. So that, I guess, for some reason, I would be totally on board with. Why? What's the difference? I think just that it would. First of all, that'd be crazy in the Brains. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a huge fan. Like, there's a lot of things about that scenario that make me smile.
If we were on the West Coast, it might be a vague possibility. You know, a lot of these things that people don't realize is that, like, sometimes by dreaming the impossible, you can make the impossible come true. Sometimes not, but sometimes you can pitch a wacky idea past someone, and they're like, "That sounds cool," and they just do it. You know. Mm-hmm. You know, like when I interviewed Daryl Hall for Punk News Podcast 500, you know, or, you know, I don't get too much. Even when Sturgeon played with, did an all leftover crack set for Crazy in the Brains, he didn't get, he got some money, but he didn't get leftover crack money out of it. He just showed up and did it and was super cool, you know, so that kind of stuff can happen, but it doesn't always happen. I, on the other hand, I've definitely sent out wacky ideas to people and got back, like, well, get back no response or get back, it's like, what are you, a shithead? Like, didn't say it, but it's like, make you feel like a real shithead. Like, why'd you even ask me that? You know, so anyways, but listen, you gotta be when you humiliate yourself to make great art. And speaking of humiliating oneself to make great art, Less Than Jake have a new single out. It's a standalone single. It's called Fat Mike's on Drugs Again, and it is a ska track. And I will kick this off because, as part of the Punk News Podcast anti-ska contingent with Hallie Bullitt, who we are both vehemently anti-ska, even though I do like the select ska band, such as Cat.
I'm not anti-ska. I'm anti a very specific kind of ska.
Fair. At any rate, so Less Than Jake have this funny song called Fat Mike's on Drugs Again. And I liked it a lot, actually. I thought it was very funny. I mean, it's a Less Than Jake song. It sounds like Less Than Jake doing, but I thought it was funny. I thought the video made it even funnier. I did like how the video had Keith Richards in it and Charlie Sheen. Although, did you guys know, like, they had, in the Keith Richards scene, there was, like, some other guy with Keith Richards and Fat Mike and one other guy. I didn't know who that was supposed to be. He's got on, like, a Florida hat.
Yeah. Who was that supposed to be?
I don't know.
Right. I went out and they were all people that are like notoriously on drugs, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
It was all right. Yeah. So I was like, oh yeah, who is that? Who else is notoriously on drugs that looks like that? I was with you. I couldn't quite grab it.
Department of, actually, hey Steve, you're fired. I guess they're trying to. Is Less Than Jake from Florida? It must be some like Less Than Jake is from Florida, I think, aren't they?
Yeah.
So it must be like some like somewhat Florida-based reference that we just don't get because we don't live in Florida. At any rate, I did like NoFX.
But aren't they also from New Jersey? They confused me. Aren't they from New Jersey and also whatever, somehow Florida?
It's Scott. No one cares. I do like how they did it. Like no, I'm not a huge NoFX fan. I'm not a hater, but NoFX has lots of songs about singing about things that actually happened in the punk scene, which actually those are probably my favorite NoFX songs, where they're basically like making fun of somebody or talking about a thing that happened. So I liked how Less Than Jake flipped the script around. It is interesting that it's about Fat Mike's drug use. What you could say, that's not cool to make a song about someone's drug use, especially if they relapse like Fat Mike. But on the other hand, if Fat Mike writes lots of songs about it, does that make it okay for Less Than Jake to write songs about it? Also, I like how they dropped like these references that I think aren't public references. Like they talk about Fat Mike hanging out with like 3 hookers or something. And there's another thing where it's like, that's the time he put the bomb pops in a box. I'm like, I have no idea what that means, but it doesn't sound
good. I didn't know what those were either. Yeah.
You know? So I thought this was funny, clever, a little edgy. And I dug it. One last thing I will add though, is how come in ska videos, everyone's always smiling all the time. If I see like a Circle Jerks video, Keith Morris is like frowning or scowling, you know, if I see like a Melvins video, they're like frowning, you know, if I see like I don't know, any other punk band that I like, they're frowning, but in ska bands, they're always smiling. And more, the smiling in ska bands, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing?
Well, it's just, it's all the horns, right? Like, it sounds so, like, happy, so they're like, yay, woo!
It's all that pep.
Yeah, yeah. It's a misplaced school spirit.
So what did you think of the video, and more? And did you enjoy the X-rated suggested lyrics?
I don't really like Austin Jake. I thought the video was fun. Like, I really like animated videos. I think that's really cool. And I'm pretty sure I figured out what the bomb pops in a box thing was, because do you guys remember there was a couple years ago? Was it a couple years ago? It must have been a couple years ago or a year or two ago or whatever. Fat Mike posted a picture of like Jen and Polly, who's putting them into like some like BDSM cage thing, and they looked really uncomfortable.
Oh,
you guys remember that?
Oh,
mm-hmm. I think that might have been what that was referencing, but yeah. I'm not 100% sure.
I'd buy it.
So. Yeah, like the song, it struck me as like, this is a very NoFX song. Like, this is what NoFX would write. Just like kind of making, talking about like Fat Mike doing the drugs and all this kind of stuff. So I thought that they did that well. And it seems like a good tribute, because one of the members of Lesson JQ is wearing a NoFX shirt. So I think it's like, see, look, we're having fun. We're doing this. So it was just a very fun thing. I wouldn't listen to the song again, but I appreciate what they did. Hallie, what did you make of it?
Yeah, I mean, I used to love Less Than Jake. I can't even tell you. I loved that band. And also they came on Gethard's show and played, and they were so good and so fun. Like musically, this wasn't like my favorite song they ever wrote, but I agree with you guys. It's so clever that they basically like Fat Mike'd Fat Mike, right? Like they wrote kind of in his voice about him. I thought that was really funny. I thought the video made me laugh. Did you notice that on the bottle of Vicodin that the prescription is for Fat Michael?
Oh, I did see that. That's funny.
That. So good. It was so funny. Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe some of the smiling John is, I do feel like they were really going out of their way to make it clear that it was on good fun. Wearing the NoFX shirt, I do maybe think there was some extra smiling just to indicate like, we're not mad at Mike, you know, like it's all good. Yeah, like I don't need to listen to this again, but it was like, it was totally, totally entertaining to check it out, you know?
Do you think Fat Mike thinks this is funny, or do you think he's pissed off? Because some people can dish it out, but they can't take it. Do you think Fat Mike can take it?
I have to imagine. I mean, they say they have, there's like a little disclaimer below the video. That's like, it's all good. He's our friend. So I can only imagine that they had to have run this by him before they did it. I can't imagine that he's got his feathers too ruffled about it.
Well, there you have it. I do like that one line. He must have been on drugs when he started doing drugs again, which I enjoy that paradox statement. At any rate, this is Punk News Podcast. Next week should be 600 if everything goes as planned. It's going to be a very special episode. Hallie, remember 80 sitcoms, a very special episode.
Very special episode.
So tune in for that. Let's close it out with Titus Andronicus, and we will see you.
How are we doing, Glenn Rock? Yes, huh? Yes! So
the screws on May.
Thank you, Glenn Rock.